They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Russia says it's in direct contact with the U.S. government about a cyber attack on the world's largest meat processing company. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The boss of Brazil's JBS, which supplies meat to supermarkets and restaurants, including McDonald's, says most factories should be operational again today. That's after JBS was targeted in a cyber hack this week that took down its operations in Australia, Canada, and the U.S. The FBI is investigating the attack, which it says likely came from a criminal organization based in Russia. The BBC's Joe Tidy has more.
The White House says it's monitoring how the so-called ransomware attack could impact meat supplies. Experts say the production outage could lead to shortages of meat or raise prices for consumers. Investigators aren't saying which ransomware gang is behind the hack or providing any evidence, but it comes after multiple high-profile ransomware attacks carried out by organized cybercrime gangs that critics say are being allowed to operate freely by the Russian state. Last month, fuel deliveries were crippled for several days in the southeast of the US after a ransomware attack targeted the Colonial Pipeline. Investigators say the attack was also linked to a group with ties to Russia, and the company confirmed it paid $4.4 million to restore its systems. I'm BBC's Joe Tidy for Marketplace.
It's been about a week since the UK and a host of European nations told airlines not to fly over Belarusian airspace. Now Reuters reports the EU is preparing a round of sanctions on about a dozen of the country's aviation officials. That's after Belarus forced a commercial flight to divert and land in Minsk, where authorities arrested an opposition journalist and his girlfriend, who were on board. The punishment from countries who swiftly declared Belarus's action a hijacking might not seem severe, but there are millions of dollars hanging in the balance, and it's all to do with fees airlines have to pay to fly over a country's airspace.
A fee structure is necessary to fund air traffic services in each country, and those fees are referred to as overflight fees.
That's Simon Hockard, Director General of the Civil Air Navigation Services Organization.
Some countries charge a flat fee because the routing over the country very rarely changes and it's much, much simpler to administrate. The US has two different prices. If you fly over the land, they charge about $60 per 100 nautical miles. If you fly over ocean, it drops all the way down to just over $25.
Prices, he said, vary, depending on things like the size of the aircraft or distance flown. These overflight fees are a way for countries to cover costs of air traffic control services. But they can also be used as geopolitical bargaining tools, as we've seen in the dispute with Belarus that stopped European flights over the country's airspace. Matthew Happold, a professor of international law at the University of Luxembourg, explains how these kinds of targeted sanctions work.
They are intended to influence behavior, and I think they're an expression of condemnation. In this case, I think with Belarus, it's about as well showing solidarity with the opposition.
Before the flight ban, which European authorities said was enacted for passenger safety, about 400 planes a day passed through Belarusian airspace. That's according to Eurocontrol, which bills and collects air navigation charges on behalf of Belarus and other nations. It says in 2019, it billed more than $100 million in overflight fees for Belarus. That might seem like a lot, but as Professor Happold explained, the economic impact of sanctions preventing those flights is likely limited.
Is it going to have an enormous impact on Belarusian government finances? I suspect that is a hit that they will be willing to take.
So if sticks in the form of cutting off flight fees don't work in Europe's negotiation with Belarus, EU boss Ursula von der Leyen has another tool in her box, a carrot in the form of a $3.6 billion economic support package, but only on the condition Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko leaves power. That is an offer a man known as Europe's last dictator, though, is unlikely to take. To Turkey now, where the country's president said he told the central bank's governor interest rate cuts are needed in the next 2 months. That intervention has sent the Turkish lira to fresh all-time lows. Meanwhile, European stocks are hovering near record highs after Eurozone factory activity jumped in May to its highest level since 1997. Well, in a few hours, Wendy's will throw open its doors to English diners for the first time in 2 decades. It's part of a wider expansion into Europe, and Abigail Pringle, president of international operations, says the fast food chain has learned from its last attempt to crack the European market.
20 years ago, I would say we learned a lot from that first time with the UK in the sense of really picking the right locations. Today, you know, we're looking for locations where people work, live, and play. Everything from a UK high street to drive-through locations, potentially delivery-only dark kitchens, a great diverse mix of ways to bring access to the brand.
The first location doesn't actually open in London, but just outside London. So what's the mix of restaurants that you plan to open across the country then?
So our first restaurant will open in Reading. We'll have 5 locations that will open this year, and that will be throughout overall Greater London. But we are already working on the pipeline for next year, where we'll double our restaurant count on the company side next year across all of the UK.
And how do you think about competition from other U.S. chains that have made their way here? I'm thinking Chick-fil-A, even Five Guys. They've already gained a foothold in this market and have brand recognition in the U.K. So how do you think about competing further with them?
We're really proud that this last year we dethroned the king to become number 2 in market share in the U.S. And so we want to be able to leverage that strength of what we have at home. We actually have far fewer competitors in the U.K. than we do in the U.S.,
In a 2019 investor presentation, you outlined an international expansion strategy that would add about 500 new restaurants and double sales by 2024, if I've read that right. How is that plan progressing, especially now that we think about the disruption that the pandemic has caused for all kinds of industries?
We have a goal to get to 2025 at 8,000 or more restaurants globally. This year, we are going to be about 7,000 restaurants, so that's an exciting growth. We think that the UK and Europe, our overall European expansion, is an important part of that equation, in addition to growing in the US.
Now, Abigail, I think the most important question is, you know, I'm an expat living in the UK here, and the thing that I miss the most when I go to a fast food restaurant is iced tea. That is just not something you see on menus here. So will it feature on the new Wendy's menu?
I can tell you that the things that you love back at home in terms of a Frosty and a great spicy chicken sandwich, great hamburger and iced tea will be there. But I will also share that we're going to have some fun with how we bring our menu to life in the UK. So you may have some things that maybe your US friends might be jealous of too.
Well, Abigail Pringle, president of Wendy's International, thanks so much for your time.
Great to be with you. Thanks, Victoria.
Iced tea sounds really good. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.